Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Bryce Castillo.
Hello.
Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, and that's it.
That's who the
all we've ever needed.
Every day.
That's as yep. as it's always been.
Yeah, I know. I noticed too that I feel guilty because it's like every time Bryce is on, like fill in, you realize Bryce is kind of like the heart of the show and why it happens all the time.
Yeah,
I do the introductions. Me, Andrew, Brian, and Justin. And later on, I'm like, oh, hey, Bryce. I think I need a new intro, like, and produced by Bryce Castillo. Oh. So, anyhow.
Nice and short.
Gentlemen, did any of you do any Black Friday shopping?
Black Friday is such a weird thing, right? Because it's such a huge deal for all of our independent online stores. I hit refresh on my store's website to just constantly see how it was going.
But you didn't buy anything.
No, I didn't. I was too busy minding my own shop, so to speak, right?
I almost wanted to go out and try to brave the crowds for some cheap like video games or something, but I need to watch my spending this part of the year.
Oh, so, yeah. What about you? Do you get in on the whole shop extravaganza?
You know, I got some household stuff because I had some Amazon, I do some Amazon affiliate stuff. So I had some Amazon money, you know, from there. And I'm like, all right, I'll get some stuff I need for the kitchen, things like that. So I did that and I got some like training stuff, but I didn't like go crazy. And, you know, I have a friend, she's from India, and kind of had to explain to her, like, don't read the ads and decide you need everything. You know, figure out what you need. Then
what's that new version of the Amazon Alexa they've got? The one with video on it?
Oh, the
show?
The Echo.
Echo, oh, no, the Echo Show? Is that what it's called?
Maybe. Yeah. I had that.
How is it?
I had it for about a day.
Oh, really? And it was just like an iPad laying in your kitchen?
With a much less resolution, tilted at a funny angle, and it didn't do as much as, let's say, even to like a video Kindle or whatever.
Wow.
Well, it's weird because I wouldn't want to sit around and like watch something or like do a – I don't even know that I would want a video call like this because at least with a phone I can move around.
Yeah, but also having it there as an installation would satisfy one requirement that makes me nervous about leaving – you know, I got a almost 14-year-old who watches over her sister sometimes. And I just think, you know, these are kids that drop phones or don't know if the batteries or can't get a hold. Like having an installation there, if I knew for a fact that I'd always be able to get through or peek in on them or that they could – press an emergency button to call someone or something. That might make a difference.
I got it because like I'm like, oh yeah, I see the idea of a thing that does everything, you know, the Echo does, plus the video. And like I sit here in my station here, I've got my iPad Pro over here, my Mac here, I've got my Echo right over here. And I was thinking, oh, I'll just, you know, I have my phone on my little propped up stand. But I thought, oh, it'd be kind of cool to have this there because I use the Echo for so much stuff. Mm-hmm. And the video display would be cool. But the video display is just, it's one, it sits at this weird angle. It's just, you look at that thing, it's just at this weird angle that like, I'm like, I don't.
The only way to really look at the screen is to stand in front of it and stare down at the counter. It seems like. For the rest of the kitchen, I can see what you mean by it not really looking like it's facing you.
Yeah, and it cannot see that little girl on the floor. I swear to you, it's on the table like that.
Because
you know,
it's angled up too, right?
Yeah. So I get the problem is one is we're used to flat screens in front of us. We don't put screens at an angle unless we're sitting on like a laptop or whatever, and just to kind of increase distance. I just think ergonomically, I don't think it was really. I think they thought, oh, we'll put it this way so it'll be a different kind of thing. I loved, like, one of my favorite things ever was, remember the Sunflower iMac, which was on the swivel?
Oh, with the
one that looked like a desk lamp?
Yeah, like the Pixar lamp, yeah.
Yeah.
that was a cool thing because that display, back when displays were smaller and it was key to move them around, that was, I love that kind of thing. And I think that form factor is kind of a cool one.
And I think there is a place for some kind of like kitchen installation, home hub connected. You just talk to it and it does stuff. But I guess the feedback from you is hold off. This feels a little too Gen 1.
Yeah, and the resolution of the video, you just look at this, you're like, okay, there is nothing that it does that, you know, $100 Kindle doesn't do, you know, and that's if you want to get part of that ecosystem. So,
well, except for being able to just shout at the A word.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and you can, I think you can put them in a mode for that, but I have, I mean, the dots are $30.
Yeah.
You know, you can connect a dot to a Fire Stick. I got the newest Echo though. Cause like I, you know, they have like, I put the dot in my room because it has a sound out that I can use for my pillow speaker. The taller one didn't have that. The new ones do. So
I must admit, I think Sonos is doing a smart thing by integrating a bunch of, you know, other digital assistants into it, because my one gripe as I continue to use my Echo in the kitchen is that, you know, meanwhile in the office of the bedroom or in the garage, you know, you have to pull out your phone like a savage and press buttons and go through menus and type stuff in. And it's
but you
like,
can get dots for $30 though.
Yeah. Well, okay, but and you have to integrate them to – to the but like I already have a Sonos, a bunch of Sonoses is my point though, and so like I just want to be able to tell my Sonos what to do.
Yeah, the dots will they will sense which one you're talking to if they overhear. They talk to each other. Like, exactly that same thing. So like I have one here, I have the dot here. I'll probably put one in the kitchen, probably with the dot to the kitchen, just because they're good at knowing where you are. But and I mean, you know, talk about missed opportunity. Like there was an article about Apple's HomePod and how that started off as they were trying to like they just wanted to come up with a really high end speaker because, you know, the iPod Hi-Fi was not enough of a lesson for them. And then they looked at the smartest. They really got caught off guard with the intelligent home assistants like, you know, Echo and the Google Now and whatnot. And HomePod got delayed. It's not coming out this year. It's getting pushed to next year. You know, no bueno, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the good thing, and this is how it really ties into a Weird Things topic, is that it's clear that that a lot of us are ready to integrate persistent artificial intelligent devices. And like that Sonos thing, like that would have sounded like crazy talk 7 years ago. The idea that you would put a persistent, always-on microphone in your bedroom would be very off-putting. But now I think most people are trusting enough and educated enough that it's like, okay, well, it's always on, but it's not sending that data, and it just waits to be activated and all that stuff. Theoretically, yes, correct.
Well, that's why I won't do a Google Now product. I won't do a Google product because, like, they take your privacy is the least important thing for them, and that's why they've had so many issues with them, because it's not baked in. That's why the Google Now pods, whatever, were sending data across unencrypted, you know, unencrypted voice data and stuff across, because like, oh yeah, no, we'll fix it. Oh yeah, sorry about that. And then they've had other issues of stuff of late of they just because it's not their selling point.
Yeah.
And you know, you make money by doing what you do, and they're a marketing company. So
yeah. Do you think that it, as far as the assistant AI voice service things, do you think that there's like a quote unquote killer feature for those yet? Because the reason I have a dot that I got about a year ago that I stopped using pretty quickly was because I never found any use for it, and it would activate itself more than I activated it. Is there something that you guys use all the time that is like a huge time saver or
just calling out like, and maybe this is just, you know, being a family man or whatever. There's times the kids are milling around or somebody makes a joke or something. And there are moments where it's really great just to say to your Echo, you know, play some funk music, and then that's all it takes, and then the whole kitchen's alive and everyone's dancing or whatever. But it's like I would never be like, oh wait, hold on guys, hold on, this is spontaneous because I'm pressing buttons on my phone, and then hey, we have music.
Wait, everybody, come back, do that thing you just did.
Exactly right. And there have been a few emergent moments. Like my favorite, and I think I've talked about this on the show, was being in the middle of cooking stir fry. realizing that, you know, I'm tapping out the last of the MSG, and then I'm able to say, "Hey, device name." Look at we're being so polite.
Oh, that
hey, device name. I buy me some more MSG, and then I had a full conversation where she was like, "Well, the MSG you bought before isn't available anymore, but I can get you a pound of MSG for this amount. Is that going to work?" And I'm like, "Yeah, go for it." And like that would have been straight up sci-fi 30 years ago. That yep. I mean, and now it really is like rote.
Yeah, Bryce, I think the answer is that everybody gets their own. It's like, what would I use a computer for or a phone for? And then you get your own sort of experiences. For me, my Echo, audiobooks every single night. It's how I listen, because they have the sleep timer. You say, go to sleep and, you know, set the sleep timer for 8 minutes, play my audiobook, and it'll just pick up whatever the last audiobook I was listening to on Audible. And what's great about that is after 8 minutes, it fades out. And so I don't have that, you know, wake up 5 hours later in the middle of some Game of Thrones novel and like, oh my God, where am I? That's the number one use. Hey, play music. I use that all the time. Hey, play some music, whatever. Third one is wake me up. It's my alarm clock. I use that to wake me up. And it's a great, you know, you're in the middle, you can be totally asleep and do that. I think saying, you know, calling out Alexa is a lot easier than going, hey, Siri, and then everything else, you know, after that. Because I don't think
it really, like, we are now in the phase where a half second difference is a lifetime on, mm-hmm. on those things. Like I won't even bother on using Siri for some things, but I'll always use it, you know, because you're right. Echo is so much faster.
That's interesting because, like, I think about all of those various things that y'all mentioned, and most of that stuff I have, you know, alarm timers that I'll set, you know, before I go to sleep, or I'll listen to podcasts just on my phone because my podcast app has a sleep timer, or I'm pretty selective about my music, so I usually know I usually am pretty picky about what I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I found the times that I most use something like Siri is when I've got my Bluetooth headphones in,
mm-hmm.
and it's got the microphone, so I can hold it and like actually give it a command without having to do like a voice trigger.
So I know you've heard me read the Riot Act on this, but I don't know that I've had this discussion with everyone else. And there are a lot of things about Apple products that are curious to me, but there's usually some reason for it. And once I hear the reason, I'm like, well, I wouldn't prefer it that way, but they at least have a reason for doing it. But there's one thing that I've never understood the reason. And I've just been convinced that it's going to fix itself any minute. I ask everybody why it does this, and nobody has an answer. The one time, if you have earbuds in, and you hold down on your earbuds long enough to activate Siri, mm-hmm. and then you tell Siri to call someone, more than likely, Andrew Main, where is your phone in that case? If you're where would your phone be if your earbuds are in and you're not using your hands on the phone, you're holding down it and asking Siri. In your pocket, right? So the part I don't understand is it just automatically assumes, knowing that that's where it is, in your pocket, hey, let's unlock the screen so your thigh can just mash all the buttons and mute you halfway through the call. I mean, it's like one out of every seven calls.
Is that still happening? Because I know we talked about this a long time ago.
Right now I can call and it will unlock the phone. Yeah. But it's like, and now we're 10 years into this device. I mean, only a few years into Siri, but it's long enough now that I think, well, they must have a reason, but for the life of me, I can't think of what it is.
I know to do certain things on there, it has to unlock the phone, but I don't know. I've never had that happen to me because, like, I always put my screen out because early touch screen phones, my thigh would touch them, you know, activate them. So my phone is always screen out for my thigh. Oh, so
for you, you've adapted the habit. But again, it's like, I just want to know their side. I want to know when they had a meeting and somebody said, well, what about this? And then that's their reason.
I mean,
I don't know.
I'm curious from our chat room, who else has had this problem?
Well, I mean, it's all of us have the problem insofar as if you have Siri dial for you, the screen is unlocked. Now, not the whole phone. But the, you know, the six buttons, the speakerphone, the mute,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's – so if you have to hang up the call or you need to use the phone, I think that – I mean, I could see that the idea is they need to make the phone buttons accessible once you make the call.
Yeah, but but they don't have it's. It just
this
seems like they should.
This is like becoming tech support on a very specific problem.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I was just hoping somebody had like a universal logic thing. Like yeah. I don't know. Seems like they could have. That
Lely,
would
be
an
call,
easy.
Let me call my friend Johnny.
Okay. So good. Yeah. Get on that, would you?
Or maybe Tim. Maybe Tim knows.
So we had Black Friday, killer sales, and now we're on Cyber Monday. Tomorrow is going to be Text Tuesday, and then we're going to look up to
Wild Wednesday. Whatever.
Yeah, Wild Wednesday.
Weird
yeah.
Wednesday, where it's like whatever you get, you'll get a weird version of it. Like this iPhone has a tentacle attached to it.
Here's your weird throwback
taco
Thursdays,
from Taco Bell.
Fax Fridays, where we fax in our orders. So, meanwhile, so I don't know if you know what happened, but made Jeff Bezos the richest man in the world.
I heard about this. He finally clicked over.
Over 100 billion.
Yeah, that's an insane amount of personal wealth. Was it triggered by any specific like Blue Origin or Amazon thing, or was it just a Black Friday?
A lot of people buying things on Black Friday.
Yeah. Well, and it's become kind of that. It's actually many people say, "Ooh, it's crass commercialism, it's consumerism, and all that stuff." But also, it's like when you're with family and you're at Thanksgiving, that's the time that you're thinking, you know, like my daughter has experienced a real anxiety about what to get everyone for gifts. Yeah. And so it's like, I don't know, I feel like in some ways it's kind of a service where it's like, hey, we're going to drop, you know, all of us are going to drop our prices. It's just going to be universally a really good time to sit and think and knock out this decision for a month from now.
Hmm. Yeah, it makes it easier because you solve your Christmas shopping, et cetera, and you don't have to worry about, you know, that. So yeah, Bezos is the richest person in the world, and wow. You know that, and I think it's kind of funny, crazy that the richest man in the world has his own private space company, rocket company. And,
yep.
You know, in light of like we talked about the mystery object that went through our solar system that was confirmed to be coming from an extrasolar trajectory.
Yeah.
And it's kind of long and cylindrical shaped.
You just wonder, makes one think.
Just a guy asking questions, Hey, Mr. Bezos, how about spending some money on, you know?
Hey, so I've got one that maybe you could track down, Bryce, because I don't know if Andrew's heard of it. I stumbled across it in my Google News feed recently, but I guess there's a series of explosions happening all over the world, giant thundering booms that people can't explain.
I heard a thing on Drudge. I saw a thing on Drudge. I didn't look it up.
Unexplained explosions or booms, okay. Or something like that. We'll see if we can find it. But
keep
basically,
what you know.
Like what I read, this is welcome in a new segment called Half Remembered Articles featuring Brian. they weren't in any one geographic location. They were happening all over the world, and they were prominent, and they and scientists weren't able to figure out what they were.
So this article says that they are audible booms, not actual visible combustion explosions.
These maybe
loud,
explosions was the wrong word.
Booming sounds. Okay.
Yeah, it says here, something strange is going on. It seems to be happening all over the planet. Reports continue to emerge of booming sounds of mysterious origin echoing from the sky from Colorado and Alabama to the Middle East, United Kingdom, and Australia, according to News Corp Australia. This could be, number one, I don't know. This feels like a perfect Rorschach test of, like, anything that you can't solve must be, you know, we're creating kind of a fake placeholder category for it, and then it starts to sound like a thing, like you know, like ball lightning or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's one of those. Yeah, it's certainly it just kind of other than we have this one of them. They found out was like an oil tank that exploded, right? Like, okay, we know what that one was.
I guess it's like the Bermuda Triangle thing, right? Where it's like the moment you explain why one plane went down, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, yeah, but what about all the others? And of course, the answer is each one has an explanation.
Yeah, well, that's
the thing. It's once we start reporting these things, it's like I heard a boom earlier today, you know, and could have been, you know, a garbage, you know, dumpster being dropped down or whatever. Once you're aware of it, you start to report these things more. It depends upon the thing you want is. one of the things that was that helped, like when it came into like discussing, like, you know, was the Earth getting warmer? Because you have this problem with local, you know, temperature stations that were near, you know, heat island effect, airports, places like this. And as metropolises grew, you're like, well, what data is it? But once we had a satellite record going from the 70s on forward, we could say, oh, yeah, we can see a temperature increased and we can argue with what's causing that. But it was hard to dispute that, you know, the temperature wasn't going up once you had satellite data. And so you want that kind of source here where you want, you know, what can we, is there seismic, is there some sort of data that points that we have to look at it? My, you know, one of the things that you can, is an possible explanation that you will not get honest answers about is when they test military aircraft.
That's exactly, you know, what I was just thinking. Like, sonic boom seems like a likely culprit. Especially, you know, picture it's an overcast day. There's no way you're going to see it, and nobody's going to admit to it. So it's like there's just a boom, and it'll be very likely in unusual locations because they're not going to want to, you know, test it out right where everyone could see it.
I have a friend whose father was a guy that put together Hynek, who put together the Project Blue Book, and you know, they left with a lot of unanswered questions about this sort of stuff. And his father's given a lot of access to things and all this, and I think my suspicion is that a lot of that stuff, observational stuff, was military aircraft. But the Air Force is not going to say, oh, yeah, no, we were testing the SR-72. You know, we were testing. They're not going to say that. They're going to say anything.
Well, I remember in the late 90s, a bunch of documents from Project Blue Book got declassified. And so much of it was just people were doing really weird stuff during the Cold War just to test it out. Like, yeah, no, we flew around and we threw a bunch of dummies out the back of a plane to see how their bodies looked when they landed. It's like, I have no doubt that people found all kinds of weird stuff during that time.
Yeah. Weird. And like you have right now, we're testing. We have a new stealth bomber that's being worked on. We have the SR-72, and there are scores of unmanned faster than sound traveling craft. And these things too, it's like we tend to think of like drones as being small, but when you actually see the size, you ever see the size of a Predator drone?
Ones that they use in the military?
Yeah, Predators, the ones that are constantly circling.
Supersonic.
Yeah.
You go look at the size of this thing and it's bigger than a Cessna. You know, this thing is big. And so you have, you know, things that are really fast, you know, that are, you know, that have, you know, jet propelled, whatever and stuff. So who knows, you know, who knows what we're testing there. And it's funny because we're like, oh, it's not this, like, it's not anything we have. How would you know? You know, that was, you know, I've had those discussions with people before where they, you know, claiming, like, we're talking about, like, this, you know, the status of the nuclear stockpile. I'm like, oh, I'm an expert and I know, like, if you know that level of information, you can't get out there and tell us what you know.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it's just that, you know, not to say that therefore as a skeptic, yeah, it must be this, but it's like, you got to entertain the possibility. A lot of the military stuff is way out there.
This Daily Mail article about the booms has a list of possible explanations. It was real quick, 1 to 10. How likely do you think it could be these 7 things? Number one, sonic booms.
10. 10 out of 10. Definitely at least some of them have to be sonic booms, right? Okay. In fact, like, yeah.
I mean, statistically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we know sonic booms happen. We know people have heard them and not known what they were. Therefore, 10 out of 10.
Yeah. Number two, military exercises. We just spent a whole 10 minutes on saying why that's...
Oh, no, but we didn't talk about actual detonations, whether they'd be underground detonations, testing munitions, and all that stuff.
Well, that rolls into number three, controlled explosions.
Yeah, okay. Yep, I'd say so far 10-10 on all of these.
Number four, unusual weather. Many loud noises link back to unusual weather events, such as electrical storms or thunderstorms.
This is one that I think people are going to want to. Anyone who experiences one of these loud booms, you're going to suggest, let's say you eliminate the first three, and then you say, well, it might be unusual weather. They're going to immediately dismiss it out of hand, saying, that sky was crystal blue, and I heard a boom. There's no way there was a thunderclap. There's no way it was a weather-related explosion. Right. But...
which is not even right.
Well, keep in mind, like...
thunder and stormy,
well, and like thundery. Living in a suburban neighborhood, there have been times that I've looked up and the entire sky appeared to be blue just because, you know, the angle of view that you're able to have, you know, is where there have been rolling thunderstorm fronts coming in right. that are just obscured by the row
Unless
of houses.
Unless you're in a hot air balloon, you really don't get a full sense of what Correct. The weather and the sky around you
Correct.
Is.
Correct. And then, and of course, as we've talked before, how quickly your memory massages everything and just insists, mm-hmm. like, I swear I looked all the way. There's not one cloud in the sky. Could not have been weather. And so I'm going to say that one should be an 8. Okay. But most people will want to call it a 4 if they've experienced a boom.
Andrew, how likely do you think meteors are a part of it? Large meteors passing above Earth often produce shockwaves that can be heard as a sonic boom.
Yeah, it's the size and brightness. I mean, those were things that we would be, you know, we know when we have pretty well-known showers, and you'd be able to probably time them to some sort of signs of brightness or whatever. So again, it could, but again, it can be this, and this, and now we're just more attuned to that. I'm still, you know, we have, you know, like I said, there is in our point chat room, somebody said, well, you know, like, well, the B-21's not produced it. Agreed. But the B-2 is, and we keep doing block variants on the B-2 bomber. And there's other stuff out there. There's things, it's experimental stuff, not things that are like the B-21 Raider is something that's going to be moved into a, you know, production sort of thing. But there's a lot of stuff you do, and you take, okay, we take this fuselage, we test this engine, we do this mount here. I don't know. Well, and we're working on...
Let's go through the rest of these 7 here. Okay, so, sure. So to the question of meteors, how often, how on a scale of 1 to 10 do you think that's a culprit?
Sounds pretty low maybe for you?
I would say low.
Yeah, okay. Number 6, sound amplified from aircraft. Some have suggested that the sound was due to inversion, a phenomenon that occurs when a layer of warm air sits over a layer of cooler air, magnifying the sound of an aircraft miles away.
Dude, I believe that. In fact, one of the folks in the chat just pointed, Dead Polymers in the chat says, as a former sonar tech, I could tell you sound travels a ridiculous distance through air and water in certain situations.
Yeah, which could amplify weather, unusual weather further away as well.
Yeah.
Remember Project Mogul?
What was that one?
That was the whole Roswell, right? The Roswell, you know, UFO thing?
Oh, yeah.
That was a balloon train, and what that was designed was they had microphones on there that were designed to listen to. They figured if you go high enough up, you can hear the sound of explosions in the Soviet Union, because what will happen is that sound travels to that layer, and that's in the ocean. There's that layer where sound travels, and the same thing in the atmosphere, and that was one of the purported purposes of Mogul, was to try to listen in on Soviet nuclear testing.
Oh, wow. That's a super clever idea.
And then when it crashed, they got these Mylar balloons, which were high tech at the time, you know, and then people are like, ah, it's UFOs. The Air Force didn't want to, like, no, this is a secret way we listen to the Russians.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, of course, we're not going to talk about it.
UFOs. Got it.
Well, and that's one of the things that people didn't think through during a lot of the height of the UFO hysteria, is that there might be a very good logical reason why the government would encourage you to believe it's little green men.
I'll give you another one. Is there are accounts, and I actually use this as a basis for one of my a little short story in the Jessica Blackwood universe, is the Soviets were testing our perimeters, our perimeter defenses, right? So there have been accounts that they would actually try to take, they would try to do runs of sending aircraft all the way up like the Tennessee Valley. You know, try to run as far as they could. You kind of think, oh, they never violated our airspace. We flew over them with spy craft, you know. Why wouldn't they try to test our defenses? You take, you know, strip down something that clearly you know it is, but you think you can go pass it through as a commercial airplane flight.
Yeah.
You know.
Like, well, and I mean, that's one of those things when you have two participants in a game of chess, neither of which necessarily even knows the rules of the game, because they don't know what the other player's capacity is, you got to do a lot of nutty stuff just to get any kind of intel on what they can and can't do.
Yeah,
like when you hear about like there was a while ago, like the Chinese detained like one of our aircraft or something like this, right? And we said, oh, we were well within, you know, our international waters. The Chinese said we weren't, whatever. I don't know who I believe us a little bit more than them,
but it's still,
but I know that we will absolutely say, oh yeah, no, we're clearly international waters. Oh, we were lost. Oh, we're this or whatever. And that stuff happens, but also it's what you say when, you know what, they have an installation there. We want to try to get a, we want to try to get a read on their radar tracking stuff. So we're going to try to dip in.
Well, and then keep in mind from their perspective, let's say we were in international waters and we weren't violating anything, but they've got the ship and it's, or they've got the aircraft. And it just seems like, no, let's say, let's firmly say that they were in our space. Let's give ourselves a few days to fight. That way we get a chance to check out all these wires and figure out, you know, take lots of photos and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What was number seven on the list?
Well, number seven, very helpfully, could be aliens. Some conspiracy theorists claim that the mysterious booms are noises created by aliens, although there is no evidence to support this. On a scale of 1 to 10,
I'm giving them a one point one.
Oh wow, okay.
I'm
almost one of these 64 booms might have been an alien.
Almost one. Yeah.
Andrew, what do you think? Man.
Can I give it a 0.00001?
Okay.
If you're going to be rude about it, the alien's up there crying. He's like, guys, I came down to your planet. I boomed as loud as I could. In my mind, I was going to come in. There was going to be a big boom, and everyone's going to look up and be like, oh, it's an alien.
I'm going to give you a science fiction scenario, okay? Let's say it's like 1925. We're at like Wardcliffe or whatever like Tesla's secret facility is, or is his radio facility there, and he's got this crazy new quantum, you know, process, Bose-Einstein condensate antenna, whatever, and we start hearing, you know, radio waves of a different president, different stuff going on, okay? And we're like, ooh, is this an alternate version of Earth that we're hearing? And like, well, yeah. And like, well, we need to contact them. Well, if I put a lot of voltage through this, I can create a lightning boom here. And it'll create a lightning blast over there. But they may not see the light.
Isn't that that sounds an awful lot like the theory of communication between different universes with gravity pulses, right? Isn't that the idea, is that the gravity in one brain, B-R-A-N-E, can find the other?
Slightly.
Yeah, there's like a dent, and there's a place where we think our universe would be dented. Like one way of that you could in a sci-fi sort of scenario, but what if you had this, you know, this multi-worlds was true or other dimensional or something, or even it's some, you know, what if it's dark matter aliens, you know, that are talking to us? And you know, there's like one of the things I love is like lightning is still a really weird phenomenon, and now we know that lightning blasts give off antimatter particles. There's more antimatter in a present our atmosphere than we think there should be.
Really?
That's crazy.
That, wow.
Lightning, antimatter.
Okay. Yeah, so I would imagine, I mean, certainly I can understand lightning being a volatile enough process that it causes antimatter, but in my mind, I would imagine the antimatter immediately annihilates against all the matter of the atmosphere. But now I want to play with the idea of what if it has just an unbelievably lucky drift dodging all of the air molecules.
So, yeah, there's a lightning of the chance of antimatter, which talks about what happens in a lightning blast and the photonuclear reaction giving off neutrino, the beta decay giving off a positron, which then strikes a neutron, creates annihilation, you know, has an annihilation effect. And then, I mean, just it's weird. And like one of the premises that I'm exploring in the next Station Breaker novel, you know, book three, is just a little bit getting into the upper atmosphere science and physics. Because there is an upper atmosphere, there is very cool things that take place, phenomenon like we call them trolls and sprites and things like, you know, when you see the northern lights, that's an example of the sort of weird stuff that can happen. You know, that's because of the high energy going across there. But there's other stuff that takes place there. We see lightning down here, but up above, there's weird, weird, weird stuff that we don't have observational platforms to observe it, and it's very way up in the distance and stuff, but so much cool stuff.
What is there any breakthrough associated with the idea of like lightning creating antimatter within our atmosphere, or is that something where it resolves itself immediately because it's in an atmosphere of oxygen?
Yeah, I would imagine whatever antimatter
it immediately annihilates.
Yeah,
itself.
Okay. Yeah. And then you know, and you might think like, oh, you know, if only we could harvest the antimatter from the lightning. But if you know, if that happens, then, you know, why not just harness the energy of the lightning bolt, or, you know.
Well, here's the thing about lightning is that if I say we don't know what causes lightning, people are like, oh no, it's because you have this layer here. It's like, those are the conditions where lightning occurs. And that's different than saying that creates it. And there is cosmic ray theory. And you ever look at a cloud chamber?
I think so. If I know what you're speaking
about. That's where, like, you go to the science museum and it's like a vapor of like alcohol, and you watch the little particle. You're watching highly energetic atomic, you know, nuclear particles, you know, cosmic rays.
I guess I haven't been
there.
No.
And you see how much energy one of those little things has as it flies through a little cloud chamber. And you think about when you're in space and you're getting pelted with those all, and we're getting pelted by cosmic rays right now, but our body has a certain ability to heal its stuff. And this is an experiment you can do. You see in a cloud chamber. So that's one particle.
Say those words again. This is, and by the way, for the audio listeners, I'm looking at what looks like a screensaver of, imagine it's dark and a juggler is really quickly whipping around a glow stick or a laser, just hither and yon all over the place.
There are these lines of lightness being created and sort of expiring over time pretty quickly. It almost looks like debris falling into water, but the debris disappears.
Yeah, imagine you had a black pond and you were only seeing, imagine above it somebody was spraying a can of silly string.
Oh, yeah,
and you watched the silly string, and you only saw the parts where the silly string hit the surface of the water. So as it would be like spaghetti noodles this way, that way, and all around.
So each of these is one particle moving through this.
It's an electron or a positron shooting through there, or it can be an alpha particle, which is two protons and a neutron. Okay,
and similar
to like helium-4. I'm pulling this from Wikipedia to make sure I get that. But helium to like a helium-4. So you're looking at a nucleus, or it can be, you can get, you know, the ones we're looking at are probably that. But anyhow, so you're looking at a, you know, one particle, either the nucleus of like helium, similar to helium-4, or you're looking at an electron or a positron just flying through there. Now that's going right now. So this is super saturated alcohol. So it's a vapor. So that's what allows us to see this. Right now, these are going through us.
Wow.
Now, when you're in space, you get a lot more of them.
That was one of the most fascinating stories I heard in some interview from somebody who was aboard the Mir space station. He was zipped up, laying to bed, tilted his head to the left. I think I mentioned this on the show, and all of a sudden saw these flashing lights, and then looked to the right and they vanished, and then looked to the left and saw flashing lights with his eyes closed. And he realized that they were being bombarded with cosmic rays, and that when he turned his head the right way, it was exactly hitting the light receptors through his closed eyes in his eyes. And it's like that's happening all the time, whether he sees it or not that entire time. That's crazy.
So if you think about, like, when we talk about lightning, things like this, again, we know the conditions, but there is the possibility that it could be cosmically triggered. You know, you could have the conditions for creating it. I mean, you could have the triggers, but you don't have the right conditions for that. Some things, theories are that it could be just tectonic and other sort of activity going place deep, deep, deep down, and it wells up. It's spooky. You know, we talk about like, oh, the ancients, they didn't know what caused, they didn't know what rain and lightning was. I'm going to tell you right now, we don't know what lightning is for sure. We can test it. We can do things. Rain, we're just now discovering, we've talked about this before, how certain microbes can influence the creation of rain by leaving, you know, they can create like ecosystems where they change their polarity, they leave crops, they go up into the atmosphere, and because they have a protein surface where water molecules will go in there and bind, and it'll nucleate, creating ice that informs rain. This is a global phenomenon we know next to nothing about. It affects the hydrological cycle. So, yeah, we're still going.
I had no idea we didn't know that much about lightning. I kind of assumed I only knew a basic understanding of something.
Turns out
it was Thor all along. Zeus is angry.
And again, we know more. We know way, way more than we do before, but there's still these, and we can create things and simulate, but then you get ball lightning and other sorts of phenomenon that are just you know, it's tricky because it takes so much energy to replicate these things.
That's one of those wonderful things about science and the nature of the universe is everything is it's literally a fractal. But from an information standpoint, it's a fractal. It's like you get it like, no, I get it. It's like the clouds are angry and they shoot fire down. And then you look a little closer and it's in more accurate, like, well, no, high pressure, low pressure, positive, negative, charge. And then looking even closer, like, well, no, I guess it's a little more complicated than that. And that's amazing.
You know what's really amazing is that this show happens every week.
Dude, by the way, let me tell you guys a dark tale.
It didn't used to be this way.
It used to be the moment anybody had some reason to not go, the other two would be like, we'll do it next week. And there was a hot, sporadic minute where it was like once a month or so. And we were really at risk of pod fading. But then we launched a Patreon, and every dollar that you guys pledge makes a huge, huge difference in making sure we show up every single week. And we can't thank the nearly 400 of you guys keeping us loud, live, and independent.
Yeah, and it's because of you guys when Justin has to go on vacation and doesn't want to be on the show, he can still do one.
And, you know, if it wasn't for us giving you our half-assed takes on news stories that we haven't really read, you'd be forced to do individual research, look up factual sources, and reliable information.
That.
You'd be a lot more better informed, but not as entertained.
See, this
guy gets
it. You're
from unknown unknowns
to known unknowns. Right, and that's thanks to the Patreons at patreon.com/weirdthings. By the way, you also get other benefits. I think the secret hidden gem of this entire program is we do a second program after this called After Things, where we talk about the real behind-the-scenes numbers and what it takes to make it as an independent creative in the 21st century. You may or may not think someone out there right now has been thinking forever, oh, I ought to get that one too. Yeah, and you haven't done it. You know why? Because you wouldn't have to if you went to patreon.com/weirdthings. You'd get your own RSS feed and you'd get the two of them side by side in one big rock block.
And you get After Things about a day or so before anybody else does on the public feed. So if you really want it, get in on it early and check it out. patreon.com/weirdthings.
Awesome. Hey, look at this. What a wonderful comment in the chat room. CornLips44 says, I very recently found you guys, but I'm addicted already. So thank you for the patrons. Aww. Yeah.
We'll wait until next week to do the do Journey Quest. We get Justin.
I mean, unless there's a side quest, unless Bryce is still running around that hospital.
I don't have a good one. But did you see the person that actually made the tapes?
No. Oh, I saw that somebody is hand assembling all.
Oh, yeah, someone put the Journey Quest on cassette tape.
Yes, individually recording them all as a straight through adventure, which I'm sure has to be the most. We should release it as the world's worst audiobook.
Like a 12-hour unlistenable block where every 20 minutes they forget what the hell just happened.
Oh my god, I would love that. It would be like the Diamond Club book of Audible.
We have fans. There are people that every time I mention thing on Twitter, oh, it's a little dumb thing I do, and people go, oh, it's my favorite thing you guys do.
Oh, no. Well, and by the way, I should be very, very clear. What I mean is, what tickles me is the idea of somebody buying the book not having any idea who we are or what this is, just being all like, this is a weird book.
Yeah. Not a lot of structure to this, you know? Like,
What else you got, Mr. Main?
So a little kind of interesting little story here, another Amazon story.
Oh.
And that is that Amazon unveiled a couple new services for AWS. One is for doing video stuff, all that. Another one is that they've unveiled Sumerian, which is their super easy to use tool for creating 3D. And Sumerian – what's it?
It's like I don't know if I know ancient Sumerian was a language. I don't know if it's still one today.
Yeah, that's a weird.
They'd be
to
like,
make the language your language an actual language.
Exactly. It's like it's now easier to talk than ever with our new product Sanskrit. All you have to do is learn Sanskrit.
Well, it's like it's an ancient language too, so it's very widely
arcane.
Forgotten.
Yes. Yeah.
So Sumerian is a tool that's supposed to be very easy. You don't even really need to be a coder to use. You can create your 3D graphics right then and there. Your 3D, very easy to do. You have a narrator if you want to do presentations. It's not like a high-end thing like Unity or something like that yet, but it can import different assets and stuff. and it's cloud-based, and then it exports it. It'll work on an iPhone, it'll work on Android, it'll work on a web browser, it'll work on all these other different tools. And so the goal is, Bryce is now doing a demo of it, and I can see this kind of cool little room where you're looking at objects, and it's like, you're like, okay.
I should point out that all Bryce had to do was click, and this is in a browser.
Yeah, this is an in-browser link. It's some, like, .scene file, but it took a minute to load up. But it's this funny thing where, like, I don't know if it's a function of it being because we're viewing it through a browser or because this is an early preview for Sumerian. But seeing this it makes me feel like the fidelity has jumped back to, like,
1990 CG,
right? Just like some of the shaders are a little mismatching, but it's pretty cool. And, like, to do this in a browser on this computer, which is mid tier nowadays,
Remember, this is you are looking at the WebVR format, and so to do real time, and you're having to do that on your end, sort of thing. So, if you export it presumably into an iOS or an Android format, you probably get a lot better, resolution and stuff. The idea is one place to create it, like when you use Unity or Unreal, how you can export it to all these sorts of different, platforms. This is designed, like, if you use Amazon Web Services, like I do, which is the real reason why Bezos is worth $100 billion, because it's kind of like the web runs on Amazon servers. Mm-hmm. It's very, very useful because it's just, I create this thing online. Now I connect it to my website, or I connect it to this other function in an app, and now it gets pushed out everywhere. I don't need to add any servers. I don't have to run anything on my local system, etc. I guess what got me excited about this was, like, you're looking at building your web thing entirely in the cloud. When you talk about, building... Right now, if you want to do a lot of web stuff or VR stuff, whatever, you build it as a game or an app that you download onto a device. Mm-hmm. Here, it's cloud served, cloud whatever, and it could be pushed onto devices through apps or whatever. But the idea is, if you want to create your own Second Life, if you want to create your own large virtual environment, instead of running a bunch of Unity servers or whatever, which is kind of what I guess kind of long-term rain thing they're going to be competing with, is you do this, and it's super cheap and easy to scale.
Well, and it's the scaling that really boggles my mind. The fact that everything from storage to processing power to the fact that everything can be upscaled or whatever. Like, and we've talked about this before in the Peter Diamandis book, Bold. He explained that you build a business based on where things are going to be in 5, 10, however many years. And Google, part of the reason it rose to prominence is because it built its business on the assumption that the cost of storage would eventually become basically free. So they were like, we're going to build our platform just imagining what if storage was free. And and granted, it's an ever-shifting curve or whatever. And likewise, now with Amazon Web Services...
Computational power.
Correct. You had to assume that processing power is infinite and free. And then what would you do? What business would you build in that case?
Yeah, looking at, like, their benefits listed here on the Sumerian website, like the very first thing... or one of the top things on here above runs on multiple platforms is lifelike characters. And in some of these screenshots, it looks like you can kind of set up
hosts, as they call them.
Yeah, like have a character that can speak multiple languages, various languages, voice, because we did talk about how Amazon has a voice dictation.
It plugs in, it plugs into Amazon Polly, which is the voice thing that does the different stuff. So then you start plugging in these different voice recognition and these voice services and stuff. So this is right now, if you wanted to make a tutorial on how to run things or how to do stuff, it's replacing the corporate training video right now. That's right. Phase one.
Well, and think about this. You probably already have the script tree figured out for everything, and you only need to do it in English, because then I'm sure you can upload it, have it translated to all different voices and all different languages, and then all different skins and whatever, and everything scales.
Or if the AWS is complex enough, you wouldn't need to translate anything. Someone could go in and say, "Oh, I need this in Polish."
Oh, mm-hmm. Right. That's what I mean. Yeah. Is like that is labor. I mean, 10, 20 years ago, you would need a team. You would need somebody who knew Polish to translate all this and make sure. And then now we have modules for all that stuff.
Wow.
That's
so
incredible.
There's a video. And again, there are people who go like, oh, well, I can already do this and these other things. Like, yes, you can. The simplicity in making this a super scalable thing.
Sumerian lets you create and run virtual reality and augmented reality applications.
Still sounds a little like 90s.
You can use it to build almost any kind of AR or VR app.
But again, this is now the basement. This is now the minimum you can expect from everything, and that was top of the line.
And it's also doing lip sync, rudimentary, but it's doing lip sync on this 3D character.
Man, I had this thought, must have been 15 years ago. I was like, I was talking to a chatbot, and I was like, well, if a chatbot can exist, and I also knew enough about, 3D rendering to know that lip syncing existed and that voice simulations existed and that bone structures existed. And then I was just like, it's just a matter of time until someone puts it all together. Like, I'm having this flash moment to 15 years ago when I just imagined, like, seems like all this could be tied together and created on the fly.
Yeah.
And here we are.
That's all for now. I hope you give Sumerian a try.
Yeah. So it can work with Lex, which is their whole building the chatbot service, et cetera. Like you're talking, that's the kind of cool, interesting thing is when you want to build those futuristic virtual assistants that feel like you're talking to a person, now one developer can tie all these things in together without having to string together a bunch of different resources, which is cool but creepy, and you're going to see more and more.
Now, I saw that this, is in VR, but they also list AR. But all the things that we've seen so far are total VR immersion. AR an element of this, Andrew?
I would imagine like you would, let's say any of those scenes that we just saw in VR, you would just say for AR, remove the walls and paint whatever reality is behind it. And then you would have, essentially you've already done the work. You're just setting the rules different on there.
Yeah, what Brian said.
Welcome to Just Guessing. That's the name of the podcast.
It's like it supports AR kits, so you can, and AR Core, which is AR Core is coming soon, which is Google. So you can export these things presumably into those are AR kit is Apple's AR system, which is fantastic, and AR Core is Google's, which will work all across Android. So the answer is yes. You'd be able to have these hosts appear and do the stuff there. And again, Unity's not hard to use either. Unity's, Unity and Unreal, they've got great tutorials. It's accessible. Anybody who has, if you're functionally literate, you can use those systems to build stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Man.
But I think this is a big leap forward as far as making it. It's the way you contextualize stuff. It's the way you say, instead of me buying a server and having to run it there or have paying someone to host a server, what if I just buy a virtual server and then I can scale? And you're like, and people are like, okay. Instead of like Salesforce.com was selling this radical idea of what if software was a service? What if instead of buying it and installing on your systems, you just logged into the web browser and used these tools? Companies want to buy it. They want to own it. They want to know they have it.
Yeah, well, man. I'll tell you what, and I howled louder than most when Adobe started doing their Adobe Air. What is it?
Air was their own like programming.
No, language. I guess the service Adobe Cloud.
Creative Cloud.
Creative Cloud. There we go. Thank you. Yeah. And you're like, no, I want to buy, and by buy I mean pirate Photoshop, and then feel like I own it, and then. But instead, it's like, $50 a month, you get everything. It's always up to date. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. It was when they were doing that, it was they got the pricing right. They got the pricing really right. I subscribe. I got the pricing right because they keep adding features because I'm always at the point where like, you know what? I could go to Pixelmator or I could go use one of these other tools. But Adobe, like, have you used like Adobe's like the new fill tools now?
The content aware fill and
the content aware fill.
Oh, sure. In other words, devil magic where it imagines. It's just,
you're like, ooh.
And if you've not seen it, it's been around for a while, but it's like you could just take a tree and you're like, lose that tree. And then it just paints in everything accurately behind that tree or how you would imagine based on what's around.
Though I will say, because we use Adobe here for all of our production stuff, and I'm of the mindset that I don't like to upgrade ever. I was on a apparently year old build of Premiere for a very long time, and when I upgraded, a bunch of stuff changed, and I couldn't open my old files without making new versions of those files. Not to mention, I hear Brandt every month talk about some new foible with an Adobe update.
Yeah, they moved the Brownian motion button to somewhere else.
Well, it's more like huge memory leaks that make his computer crash every time.
Oh, geez.
And
that's no bueno.
So, like, I could see in a certain world being like, it would probably make more monetary sense for me to buy a set version of Premiere or After Effects or Photoshop and have it for a set amount of time, for however long I'm going to use it, because I really don't want to update, and it's got all these great features already. But even then, you're getting into not just buying one program, but buying multiple programs, and that's a huge upfront cost. Yeah, I don't know. I think overall Creative Cloud's a good idea, but this is from someone who's on Windows 8.1. I don't want to upgrade anything.
It comes down to, again, figuring out like how much those features are worth if you want to use it or not. And I was one of these people that was, I remember I had a friend years ago, I mean, we're talking like 15 years ago, oh, what if Microsoft goes to a subscription? I'm like, I will use another word processor because it ain't worth a subscription, you know? And like, oh, what about your video editor? I'm like, it depends. If the features are there, and then what I've seen now is like, I don't do the Microsoft subscription because to be able to pay a monthly fee to use Word, which I hate using, doesn't sound like fun to me, you know, but... And I think Google Docs is so much of what I want to use for that.
Yeah. Hey, do you guys want to talk picks?
Yeah, let's talk picks.
I've got a pick.
All right.
I started watching this last week, and I finished what was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Marvel's Runaways on Hulu.
Oh, and is it good?
It's very good. I think that there are three episodes out now, so it's kind of like, I don't know if it's going to have the Marvel thing of the bad half.
By the way, I just had one of those moments where I realized that the information that you just finished watching the entire series gave me no valid information on whether or not it was good or not.
Well, I say that because there was only three episodes out when it premiered, because it just premiered. But I don't know the comic lineage of it at all. But it's a bunch of they're doing this really weird, not weird, but they're doing a very specific sort of storytelling where they're like, all of these kids clearly have a history with each other, and they were together for something, but no one wants to say that they were a superhero team in the past. But they're acting like they used to be a superhero team in the past, and now they're
these are the adults or the kids?
These are the kids.
Got it. Okay.
And at the end of episode one, it sets up this weird dynamic between the kids and the parents of what everybody's up to. So three episodes in, and it's playing heavily into the mystery factor, where I think in some of the promo stuff, at least from what I heard, it looked more like a horror sort of show. But it really is so far a action mystery. So I really dig it. That's Runaways on Hulu.
I got a pick.
Okay.
That everyone and their brother was telling me I should finally watch. And I finally watched it. And I'm about three, four episodes in, and I'm in love with the Hulu original Future Man.
Oh, really?
Mm. Oh, my God. It is the funniest comedy I've seen in a very long time.
I never put it together, but it seems like now I'm thinking about it, it is the perfect show for you.
It's if you like, you know what it is? It's the production quality of the Film Riot shorts. Although at times Film Riot shorts look better.
Look a little better, yeah.
but it's filled with really talented. And it's funny because most of the people pitching it were like, oh, man, you like Future Man. It's like sci-fi, but funny. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I finally watched it. I'm like, no, this is just a great comedy that happens to be about the tropes of a science fiction, you know, time traveling, rule-bending world.
It's like a kind of schlubby guy, you know, in a dead-end job who last Starfighters his way into having people from the future.
Correct. And every episode, they call out the premise of what's going on. So it's like they get to that part of the script.
Every time?
Every episode. Because like they do...
They do that twice in the first one.
Correct.
And I'm like, are they...
Okay. And then newsflash, they travel back in time and they change something. And in the future, they go back to the present and a bunch of things are different. And every time you notice something different, you hear that Back to the Future... you know, and then he says, "Hey man, did you ever see Back in the Future?" And then he's talking about it, like, and then they deconstruct his actual experience. He's acting like he's talking about in the theoretical with a random person, saying like, "Man, that's really messed up because Marty McFly would have to fake his way through every conversation because he would have literally no idea who he's met or what their relationships are with anyone." And then, you know, that being the accurate description of what he was going through at that exact moment.
Yeah.
It's so self-referential. It's so much fun. It's so transgressive in all these great tropes. It's great, man. I loved it, and I can't wait to watch the rest of it.
So, Hulu again.
Yeah.
So, yes. I mean, no, I'm like, so Hulu's got Handmaid's Tale, mm-hmm. Future Man, Runaways, and, you know, I remember, you know, I think that's kind of exciting because, like, Hulu was always sort of like, it's yeah, it was going to be cool. And then you go there and like, yeah, no, we're going to put – if you want to pay for Hulu, we really want to show you commercials, you know, which they changed. But that was like,
sure.
Well, so why am I going to Hulu? And then over time it became this sort of maybe it has it, maybe it doesn't have it. But now that they're getting really into originals, I haven't found as much on Amazon Prime originals that I've been as into as I have like on you know, like Netflix.
I always feel like every time I look through the Amazon Prime originals, it's always like – action-y movie or period drama not Mario Batali, the BAM guy. He's
Nightcrawler.
Emerald.
Got it, yeah.
you know what's funny is I thought, wait, is he talking about the cook? And then you were.
but like the Amazon has a very weird thematics in just their slate of programming so far.
Also, you know, they're doing a big rehaul. We talked about this before. That's why they're buying Lord of the Rings. They're doing Ringworld I think that they had a very scientific sort of process they were trying to do. Like, oh, well, first we'll have people rate scripts. Then we'll choose the scripts with the best reviews. And then we'll do table read-throughs with actors, read-throughs with actors reading these things out. And then we'll choose the ones that are the best there. And then we'll take, and it's like, it's like a programmer who does not get how movies or books or things like, you know, like I'm going to write a book and then I'm going to write two possible different chapters for chapter two. And I will choose the one that people like the most. And then I'll go write. And it's like, you gotta be, you know, there's formulas and things like this, but you got to take risks and you got to be a confident narrator.
And every part of that is a failure point where someone can come in and say, well, let's just do the thing, the mainstream thing, and make it a detective movie show.
Yeah,
One last thing on Future Man. The cast has been fantastic. So many faces that you half remember from other projects. What's his name? That's why I have to open the IMDb here. Keith David, the guy, he was in They Live, and he plays the president on Rick and Morty, and Ed Begley Jr. is hilarious. Yes,
yeah, he's great.
And he's just so insane. Haley Joel Osment plays a colossal asshat. He's great. highly recommend it. Give it a try. Cool. Filthy as hell.
Yeah.
The casual F-bomb dropping, it feels very much like you're listening to like a Comedy Bang Bang podcast or something. Just everybody, every other word is F-word.
Well, this is a Judd Apatow joint?
No. Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen.
Excuse
me. Cool. Andrew, you got a pick?
I have a pick.
Cool.
My pick's actually an album. I never recommend music stuff. And this was one of these things where I was on Drudge Report and he mentioned like this link to this band. I'm like, well, this Matt Drudge doesn't make a lot of music picks. This is going to be interesting. And I read about this band. I'm like, oh, this sounds kind of cool. Let me get their album. I got there. I'm like, oh, I dig this. Totally get it. Greta Van Fleet.
Have
you heard them?
No.
Michigan band. They're like 18, 19, 20 years old. Very Zeppelin sounding. Very, very, very Zeppelin sounding. You listen to this, and that's kind of like why I like it, because I'm a big...
It does.
Highway tune?
Yeah, and this is a current band, right?
Yep.
We were talking about this last night, Bonnie and I, that my biggest gripe with Pandora is that you give it a seed song, let's say Led Zeppelin, and it's like, oh, you must want Led Zeppelin sounding stuff all from the late 1960s, because that's where that one's from. Yeah. And it's like, no, what I want to tell you is I like Led Zeppelin and I want new stuff that sounds like Led Zeppelin. And I wish it did a better job of making that leap and turning me on to stuff like this.
Mm. Well, they've already popped a bit. They were, they're iTunes, like, artist of the week or whatever. And they've been in some soundtrack stuff and all that. But they're like 18, 19, 20 years old. You listen to them and you're like, one of the things I loved about, Zeppelin was, they were influenced by a lot of different things. We'll just put it at that. But, and I have this thing like, I made a remark once. I was at a mall and I saw a kid wearing a Led Zeppelin t-shirt and I said, look at this kid wearing a Led Zeppelin. And his friend's like, oh, they just got a Hot Topic. They don't even know what it is. I'm like, I bet you they know those albums better than you and I do. Okay. I bet you those kids, I bet you these kids these days, I bet you their musicology is greater than ours is.
Oh, yeah.
And so. And that's you see this band and you're like, they're effing great. They're great. And they're 20, 18, 19, 20 years old. Yeah. Where are they going to be in 10 years when they're still young? So
very cool. And it looks like the current album is From the Fires, if you're looking for that.
Yeah. It's their EP. So that they're actively touring. So Greta Van Fleet, they took their name from, they're from Michigan. There was a woman there who played the dulcimer called Gretna Van Fleet. And they loved the sound of the name and they used it with her permission. They created Greta Van Fleet, which is a very rock and roll way to call your band. So,
but it's also very millennial to get permission.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, they had her like open for them at one point or something too. Oh, so, wow. Like you say, Brian, like there's genres of music that it's nice to see somebody go back and go do. I think the quality of music today is fantastic. If you just listen to pop stuff and the formula-driven stuff, which can be quite good, like I think Taylor Swift is talented. I think she does some neat stuff. And I think people dismiss that. I'm like, no, it does what it needs. And you listen to her passion for what she does. But there's a lot of alternative stuff out there that is just – I think there are more people getting into music than there were before. And because of the exposure to listen to stuff, it's amazing.
Well, and I think we also – I would like to believe this. I might be believing this just because I'm getting old, but I had hoped ever since I was in my 20s that we've reached a level of audio production where – because it used to be from the 1900s to the 1970s-ish, every decade you could hear instantly – the quality, correct. Old music sounded old. It sounded like your parents' music. It sounded old. Whereas, nowadays I feel like we've hit this, it's as good as the best ears can hear. Yeah. Everything recorded for the last 30 years, basically. And so it seems like we live in a more postmodern society, so like we get postmodern jukebox where it's like they take current stuff and then make it sound like old stuff.
I think you're also finding nowadays more intricacy in production, not outside of the actual fidelity, but in things like songwriting and use of instruments and arrangement.
Yeah.
Especially like it's really prominent in electronic music where there are new sounds and all sorts of different levels of sophistication being put into these wholly digital works.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing more and more of that come through in kind of a newer sort of way.
You go look at I'm using the Apple Store, right? And then you go over to the section there and you look at what they have for music and stuff and the production stuff. And again, there's way better, way richer. I get that. But you can put together a great home recording kit for about $1,000 using an iPad or an iPhone or whatever that will give you, exceptional quality. Again, if you want to go much higher end, which better mics and stuff like this, yes and. But what you can do in the home for $1,000 that would have cost tens of thousands of dollars years ago is incredible.
Yeah.
I'm just looking through like right now, like a lot of the iRig and, a lot of the microphone stuff and all that. And then when you put on a really good pair of earphones and you listen, somebody explains to you and you listen to the differences, you can go, oh, okay, I get this difference between this microphone and that. I get how it's picking that up. But you want to get your stuff out there, and considering, how a lot of people just listen to stuff, using, tiny little speakers and stuff,
Yeah.
It's an amazing time to be a creative, which is an amazing segue for what we'll do next, which is we're going to end this now and go to After Things. Unless we have any more picks, any more last minute picks?
I
feel it's been complete. You would think because we're maybe – are we missing something?
What?
I don't think so.
It's been just right.
Not at all weird. Oh, wait. It's been weird?
Oh, yeah. It's been weird.
Diamond hopes you have enjoyed this broadcast.